The views expressed on the following live program do not necessarily reflect those of KSCO Radio, its staff, management, or advertisers. If something is said with which you disagree, please call us during the program in order to help us balance comments.
This is Richard Quigley. Here we go for another Thursday afternoon United States Freedom Fighter Forum. Welcome one and all to KSCO for the next 41 minutes and some odd seconds, I guess. We're going to talk about a bunch of different stuff today. Start off with a little bit of cleanup from last week. Apparently, there's some folks out there that don't always get the point of my message. And you would not believe the amount of attention I got for last week's show. But it means we're getting out, and that's good. The point of last week's show, there were several issues that were brought up, but the one that seems to have everybody most stressed out was my conversation about the effect of what I if I use the term liberal fascist, I get in trouble with all kinds of people who can't understand the English language. Never bothered to look up liberal or fascist to see how well they fit together. And yuppies in general are not necessarily of themselves terrible folks. So I guess I used the phrase yuppie scum, and that just confused everybody. They got their head all twisted. I guess they thought they were one, and they might be right. But the point of the discussion about the harassment of the people, the community that congregates in the shopping center down in Aptos, was to point out the difference in the personality of this community today from when I moved here 25 years ago. It was to point out to those people that have had a sense of it but couldn't really put their finger on what it is that has changed and decide whether or not it was necessarily a good thing, to take a look at some of the elements of where these changes are coming from. So what I did was is that I used an example, because I can only use examples from my life. It was anecdotal, had to do with some folks that were, wonder why that thing's red. I guess I can get somebody to tell me that later. Anyway, had to do with some businesses in the Rancho Del Mar Shopping Center and how this manifested itself in the type of behavior that I attribute to that sect. Anyway, so everybody's all excited. They think I'm doing personal vendettas and that I hate women and I'm down on business and blah, 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 blah. No. The point of the show was that 25 years ago, Santa Cruz was a place. One of the neatest things about it from my perspective and one of the reasons I moved here and one of the reasons that I know a lot of other people were happy to live here and moved here was that there was a level of tolerance in this community unparalleled to anything I'd ever seen before. It was like the more bizarre the individual, the greater benefit they seemed to be to the community. And our differences were lauded and appreciated in that. And then suddenly there was a turn in the economics of the society. And I blame the UCSC for some of this, and I think it's not unreasonable to put a lot of it in their lap. And by the way, that editorial of Kay's Whirling, my goodness, talk about on the money. And the rest of it seems to be the unearned wealth group, the ones that got lucky and hit the computer industry at a time when you didn't have to do anything to end up with more money than God and no justification for having received it. And I'm not saying that nobody earned their money. I'm just saying that the carpenters that build their houses don't end up as rich for building their houses as they do for providing the software for them to get on the net for email. There's an imbalance there, which is working its way out, you know, like the marketplace will. But so you have this unearned wealth, and with wealth comes power, and with power comes, I don't know, it seems to have manifested itself in this yuppie group. as a mouthful of shoulds. So they got a pocket full of unearned money and a mouthful of shoulds, and all of a sudden the things that were the character and the heart of Santa Cruz suddenly become offensive. And these people sit there and they poke and they point at this and they point at that, and this person doesn't need to be there, and this person should go over there, and this person should do this, and this person should do that, and on and on and on and on and on, to the point that it's hardly recognizable there were Santa Cruz anymore. So the point of the show, for those that missed it, and clearly those people that are so outraged with what I said, are either a part of that and they really do want the community to end up as they say, or they're not a part of it and they missed the point. The point of the show was just that. My reason for being here is to see what I can do as a citizen to help make things better in Santa Cruz. And I think one of the things we can do is to try to restore the nature of this community to what it was 25 years ago. I'm not talking about the economic nature. I'm talking about the social nature, how we view one another. So, you know, I'm sorry if you don't get it. And I'm sorry if you get mad at me if you don't get it. And one more note on that level. I've been with at least one caller and a couple of emails that have come in, I've been credited with hating women. Well, let me tell you, I'm a relatively healthy heterosexual male. And I love women. I think women are just wonderful. As long as they stay in their place. But, grab your phone, call real quick. Hold on. Their place is side by side with the rest of us. Women have sought that place, and it's side by side with the rest of it. Used to be pedestaled so that we were afforded the opportunity to open doors and defend and all that, but the women have decided they want to be what they call equal, and I am totally there. Okay, that's fine. I don't know why they gave up their place on the pedestal, but side by side with the rest of us. But women do not belong, nor are they entitled to be standing over us pointing their finger and shaking their finger and explaining to us how to live our lives. That's a job reserved for mothers, and their authority ends with their children and perhaps their husband. But so, no, this nonsense about me being just an automatic woman hater is ridiculous. Some of the women in this county for whom I have the highest regard are female in gender, as if it makes any difference. So that handles that. Now, last night, great night on the town. I went out. I never go out. But last night I went out. I went to Moe's Alley. I heard a band, the Asylum Street Spankers, and it was just an awesome show. And if they ever come back to town, and those of you guys that like the old genre, live instruments, no amplifiers, you got to see them to believe them. They're just a great, great show at Moe's Alley. I enjoyed it very much. I left there about, I'm guessing, 11:30, quarter to 12, and got stopped by California Highway Patrol. And Officer Friendly last night was not feeling so particularly friendly. In fact, Officer Friendly last night managed to get his gun out of his holster. And I got to tell you that in my 60 years on the planet, it's the first time I've ever had a cop pull a gun on me. So I don't know what that's all about, but you can bet we'll be talking about it in the future, and not from the perspective of trying to beat the cop up for doing what he thought was his job, but from the perspective of trying to help you guys understand how to avoid getting caught in a situation where you're being faced with a guy that's got a gun and you're not sure isn't mad enough to use it. So hopefully I'll be able to line up somebody from the California Highway Patrol to come in and explain to us how we can avoid that particular mess. It was pretty scary. And today's show is going to be honored. We've got a guest coming here. I'm going to do early breaks and run commercials early because Michael Bradshaw is here, or will be here around 12:30. Michael wrote he's with the Central Coast Center for Independent Living. And he wrote an article that appeared in the latest edition of the Aptos Times. And if you remember, another part of my show last week had to do with the harassment of this disabled man down there. Now, that's not what we're going to talk about today directly, but it was almost cosmic when I picked up a copy of the Times and I saw this article from Mr. Bradshaw. It's entitled "A Voice for the Victims." Disabled Americans are 5 to 10 times more likely to be victims of crime than non-disabled, with many more cases unreported. And he's talking in reference to a hidden epidemic in America, crime against people with disabilities. If you haven't seen a copy of the Times, grab it, read the article. Hopefully he will share everything with us when he comes on the air after these breaks. I see he's arrived now. I'm going to run everything in just a couple minutes so we can talk to him. If you have any questions, the call-in lines will be 479-1080, 477-1340. We're going to break and do the commercials now, and we'll be back with Mr. Michael Bradshaw and talk about all these things in just a few. Okay, that takes care of that part of the show. During the break, Mr. Michael Bradshaw stopped by. I'm going to turn his mic on here in a minute. We're going to see if he's communicating okay. Got it turned on there. Mike, you want to give it a shot and see what happens?
I hope everybody can hear me okay.
Great pipes on top of everything. I'm going to read the opening paragraph from your article and ask you to drop in there. We'll fire some questions and stuff. From the article, Voice for the Victims, he writes, "As my children grew up, I always encouraged them to take on new challenges and responsibilities. I encouraged them to try new things and to become gradually more independent. But along this road to independence, there are many hazards, especially if the individual has a disability. One of these hazards is becoming a victim of crime. Doesn't happen much, you say? Don't see much written in the papers? Then I suggest you look again and pay close attention to what I'm about to say about a very hidden epidemic in America, crime against people with disabilities. You, sir, are, what is your position with the Central Coast Center for Independent Living and what are they doing and where are you from? Are you a native Santa Cruzan and all that kind of stuff? Would you tell us who you are?
Well, a little bit about me. I'm originally from Florida, decided I like this coast a lot better, and got my taste of this area many years ago through the Navy in Monterey.
You mean that if you hadn't been allowed to come to port, you probably never would have found a place?
Possibly.
Okay, I don't want to open those doors right now, but go ahead.
I got into the advocacy for people with disabilities primarily because I have a son who is developmentally disabled. And when I moved here, I got the opportunity to work with the Center for Independent Living. And basically our job is to help people with disabilities live the most independent life possible, to provide them with information on how to access various services, organizations, benefits, things of that nature in the area to, again, make them more independent.
And this is funded. Who funds the works that you do?
We're funded by a large combination of grants and things from Department of Rehabilitation, Department of Mental Health, private foundations. We are a nonprofit, and we charge for none of our services.
Okay, so the disabled people that you serve don't have to have money. What they have to have is need.
That's correct.
Okay, and do you accept contributions and the like? I mean, if people wanted to find out more about you and they thought you were worthy of a contribution, are you allowed to take those private contributions?
We are allowed to take contributions, and I don't think we would turn one down.
Okay. Well, I will do my very best through the course of this show to remind people that they're welcome to help support you. This particular article focused on crime, and there were a couple of things in here that struck me. In particular, with some of my experiences with the criminalization of disabilities, and one of them talks about how it is that police officers and the like don't understand the nature of disabilities, and how does one identify? All right, let me rephrase that. All people that are disabled are not visibly disabled. Is that a fair statement?
That's a very fair statement. There's basically, the visible disabilities like a wheelchair user, and then you have people that have what's called hidden disabilities, which would be my son who is developmentally disabled. You don't see his disability.
Okay, now, I almost feel like it's one of those areas where I don't know about most citizens. I personally sometimes get a little nervous around disabled folks. Particularly if I start to offer them a hand, because there are occasions where I have tried to offer a hand to a disabled person getting through a door or getting up a ramp or something in a wheelchair and have been chastised by the disabled person for doing that. And there are other times when they simply thank me and accept the help the way it's intended and move on. So how does one know, first of all, how does one know how to react to the disabled and initially? In other words, is the general state of mind of a disabled person, please don't accommodate me, just don't interfere with me, just leave me alone altogether, or is it one of they are anxious to accept whatever help?
I don't think we could say there's a general state of mind. I think the gamut of people with disabilities is just like every other part of society. We would not help a person just walk up and try and help them across the street. Generally speaking, you ask if they need help. And I would recommend that with anybody, if you see with a disability that might be having a hard time, ask them if they need help. They may want to do everything themselves, and that's perfectly fine. And they may appreciate your assistance. I have had instances myself here in Santa Cruz County where just asking and been told no, I'll take care of it, no problem. But I would do the same thing myself to people asking if they could help me.
Understood. So we don't need to feel any sense of rejection or having insulted someone if we ask if we can help them and they say no.
No, not at all.
Yeah, because I know that I know that it's been a consideration with me and talking with other people. I've found that they, again, similarly. Okay, so we accommodating the visibly disabled. Then we have some parameters for that. But the situations that I'm most concerned with, because of my life experience, are the ones that are the folks that are not visibly disabled. Mm-hmm. How do we arrange this without putting some sort of gold star on them that says disabled person, please afford reasonable accommodations or whatever? How do we protect the rights of the disabled that are not visibly disabled?
I think one of the keys to that is to become educated ourselves. Learn a little bit about how certain disabilities manifest themselves. Learn not to be afraid. That's one of the things, is that there's a lot of fear out there, and there's nothing to be afraid of. I have friends that happen to have a disability called epilepsy, but there's nothing for me to worry about. That, you know, I have been told or taught how to provide assistance for them, and other than just go about your normal life. But I think one of the keys is to learn about, again, the manifestation of that disability.
Rosie's going to help you with your mic. You're getting a little soft.
Oh, okay. No problem.
I'm turned up to where we can hear the ant crawling on the wall now.
Okay, no.
Anyway, okay, in relation to the folks that aren't visibly disabled, I'd like to focus on that as much as I can. If a person states that they are disabled, would it be unusual for a person that is disabled to state that they are disabled to establish the whatever it is that they're being? I don't know how to phrase this. I can't believe I'm having a problem with this. How do we identify? Let's go back to how do we identify a person that's disabled that's not openly visibly disabled?
There is no specific way to identify a person that has a hidden disability. None that I'm aware of. There are certain hidden disabilities that you might be able to see something on their nature, like something called Tourette's, which one could visibly see by minor facial or shoulder tics, or movement of the head, things of that nature. But generally speaking, a person with a hidden disability is like any other person in society. If there is something wrong, they have been victimized in a crime, they may not be able to express themselves as eloquently as other people, but they will try and find a way to express that they have been victimized by a crime.
And what if nobody recognizes that? What if nobody acknowledges that? Isn't that the tragedy you're speaking of in your article?
If it is not recognized, then it's completely overlooked. The authority figures may tend to think of it as another crime, actually, a way of acting out, a way of being uncooperative. where if they knew a little bit more about, let's say, the manifestations of the disability, they might understand that what they're actually seeing is just a disability and not a person trying to be hard to get along with at all.
Okay, so as officials or citizens for that matter, how do we make that judgment, and how would you recommend that judgment be made with your experience, and what would you recommend as the reaction? In other words, and I was in downtown San Francisco when this is early in my growth. I was a relatively young man, and I'm standing on a street corner in San Francisco, and there was a man standing next to me talking to his invisible friend, rather down, as a matter of fact, lecturing his invisible friend. And so I just thought it'd be real cute, you know, for me to point out that maybe you ought to lighten up on your friend a little bit. He doesn't seem to me like he's creating all that much of a problem. And this guy went off on me completely. He started yelling and screaming. And as a further mature adult, although some people doubt that I'll ever be that, but further down the line, I would have said nothing. I mean, I would have probably appreciated the fact that this guy is a lot freer than most of the people that walk the streets, because he doesn't seem to have all the limitations. But in that situation, how do I know that wasn't just some prankster? Or in any situation, when you deal with somebody that's claiming that they're doing what they're doing because of a disability, how are we supposed to be able to judge that?
I take them at their word. We provide a lot of disability awareness presentations and trainings throughout the community. And one of the things we try and get people to do is understand that a person with a disability is just like every other person. And they need to be treated with respect and dignity. And I've probably, in my younger age, would have done the very same thing that you did, made a comment about the person's imaginary friend. But now, having matured a lot and learned a lot of things, there's no sense to say anything.
I understand as an adult that was a stupid thing for me to do.
Well, one of the things we try and do, too, in fact, I've been working with one of the local schools here, and they have a real good inner school program about teaching kids about people with disabilities. And I've been working with them about, you know, compassion, about not making snide comments, about not pushing and not making fun of people. And I think one of the keys is if we can get people to change their attitudes young,
oh, yes,
then they grow up with a better attitude about whether it's a person with a disability or whether it's gay and lesbian or you have, you know, different ethnicity. It really doesn't matter.
So you're into more acceptance, that a healthy society is an accepting society of
Correct.
Everybody's right to be who they are.
Yes.
Call-in lines are 479-1080, 477-1340. I'm here with Michael Bradshaw with the Central Coast Center for Independent Living. If you have any questions about disabilities and the function of the Central Coast Center for Independent Living or anything along those lines, feel free to give us a call. We'll put you on the air. In line with training people on how to, providing training or instruction or insight on how to deal with disabled people in a society, have you ever been approached, for example, by any of the local police agencies to give these presentations? And if so, to your knowledge, has there been any of this training gone on with the various police agencies to date?
Yes, we have had a couple of sessions. In fact, we did two good sessions last year with the Capitola Police Department.
Okay.
And they had several officers. Our training is to basically discuss with them what it means to have a disability or to be perceived as having a disability. We discuss the Americans with Disabilities Act with the audience. And then we have a session where they experience having a temporary disability. And we have various scenarios ranging from a wheelchair user to a person who has received a traumatic brain injury and can't find their car in a parking lot or something of that nature. And then they come back and they discuss not only how they felt with that temporary disability, but there's an observer and what the perceptions were of the environment, how people reacted to them. And based on the evaluations after these sessions, it's quite an eye-opening experience. I was very impressed at the last one we did when the officers came back. They were talking about on their walk or their roll down to the store, they had noticed a car parked in a red zone. And before, when they came back and now had access to their cell phones again, one of the officers called in and said, there's a car illegally parked here and it's blocking the red zone. You can't get a chair down the ramp. And somebody went out and immediately ticketed it. We have been doing some presentations, some work with, or having some meetings with the Watsonville Police Department with the idea of having more formalized training in the near future.
Have you heard anything? John's called in from Thelma. Let's talk to John and see if his question is better than mine, because I was about to ask you about the Sheriff's Department. But John, are you there? John, are you there?
Hello.
John, are you there? Are you there? Welcome to KSCO.
Yay! Hello?
Hello?
Yay, I drive. Hello?
Sounds to me like your phone's cutting out. John, are you okay?
Yay, I'm okay. Are you?
Did you have any questions, John?
Yes, I have a car. Yay!
Okay. Some people are just a little bit too young for their own good. Okay, and so you haven't had anybody inquire from the Santa Cruz Sheriff's Office yet?
Haven't had anybody inquire from them, but at the same time, I haven't had the time or the ability yet to get out to them and make this offer to them.
Okay, so they probably don't know that you're doing what you're doing, which would not be.
Well, I don't want to say that they know or don't know.
Okay, but the problems that exist downtown, for example. Do you have much experience with disabled people that have that are both disabled and homeless that are less than fairly accommodated for the reasonable accommodation for their disability in downtown, and what is your experience at that level?
Well, we have many consumers that are homeless. And I'm not sure what you're referring to as an accommodation downtown.
Well, doesn't the UNRU Act, is it UNRU that requires a reasonable accommodation, or is the ADA that requires a reasonable accommodation for the disabled?
Well, they both require a reasonable accommodation, but I would need to know what the situation is and what the accommodation is that's being asked for.
Okay, I'm just talking in general terms. I'm talking in general terms if you're aware of any situations in anywhere, pick a spot. The only reason that downtown Santa Cruz came to mind is because it's another one of those that I personally know about. I don't know what if any problems exist in Capitola or Scotts Valley or Watsonville at all. So it's a general question about do the homeless have? It would seem to me that the homeless population would have some number of disabled among it that are misdiagnosed, as you indicated, that it's hard to tell the difference between one from another. And does that ever manifest itself into abuse of these individuals on the basis of their disability?
I have not had any cases reported to me at Cecil. I would have to think that in any other aspect of life, there would be cases of, in that population of abuse. One of the things we would stress is that people with disabilities are no different than any other part of the population, and that we do need to abide by the laws and regulations of the society. If for some reason we cannot function within those laws, like if you have a law on access to a sidewalk that requires things be 4 feet apart or a height limit, that would be for all the citizens, including people with disabilities. We tend to think, let's just take the blind and visually impaired, particularly those using a cane.
Yes.
You think of, well, or people may think they're using the cane to determine what is directly in front of them as they walk, but also what they're depending on us for is keeping, like, head high, keeping up obstacles out of that.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
Because I very don't ever see, I think, a blind person tapping the ground with the cane at the same time trying to swing one up at
yeah,
eye level.
Right. Got it.
And that's happened in many places where people, society forgets the potted plants hanging out there.
Understood.
Until somebody comes in and reminds them, this is an accommodation.
Okay, so that's in the reasonable accommodation.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. That makes a lot of sense. The disabled that you speak of are victims of crime. Then most of these crimes you're talking about are the normal crimes that we would consider being knocked down, having their purses stolen, or
correct.
Okay. They don't. They're not crimes of discrimination. They are just regular crimes that the disabled person cannot adequately report because of their disability, and that's how they become more victimized.
I would call them crimes of opportunity because a person with a disability might provide a greater opportunity to be a victim. They would be your street muggings, your sexual assaults, your robberies, fraud, things that would normally be perpetrated against the rest of society, but in a lot of these cases, they see the person with the disability as an easier victim. They couldn't get, you know, can't get away, can't fight for themselves, however they're perceived.
Got it. Well, if there are folks in the audience that know of situations, for example, where they believe that there'd be an agency that could benefit from perhaps it's a form of sensitivity training, as I see it.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, without getting real, eclectic about it, it's sort of a form of sensitivity training.
It is. That's correct.
Would you recommend that people that are familiar with these types of things happening by agencies or something contacting you or the agency to see if we can bring you guys together for these type of training sessions? Because it sounds to me like the end result is, if I'm hearing you right, the Capitol police officers learned a lot from the training and are better officers on the backside by their read and yours.
I would say so. Yes.
Yeah. Would we be better served if we had another agency in mind to contact them, or you, or both?
Well, they can contact us. There are. I don't think there's another agency in the area, and I may be wrong, that provides disability awareness type training. There are other agencies that can help us out in putting things in there.
Are you talking about other government agencies, not police agencies, but other government agencies?
Nonprofits.
Okay.
Understood. This is basically in the public sector.
Understood. I've got Robert from Santa Cruz. I believe this might be Robert Norris. I won't know yet. Maybe it's another guy that has a car. We don't know. Welcome to KSCO, Robert. Who's there?
It's me indeed.
Yes. In case you're not familiar with Robert Norris, Mr. Bradshaw, Robert does a lot of work on homeless advocacy issues downtown Santa Cruz and is a very activist, hardly covers it. He's very busy in trying to protect the rights of the homeless in that area, among whom you have some disabled people, Robert.
True enough. Hi, Mr. Bradshaw.
Good talking to you.
Have you all met one another?
I don't know.
I don't think we have.
Well, that might be something you might like to do besides on this show. But did you have a question or comment, Robert?
Yeah, I know that you last week and we've spoken before about the concerns that some disabled folks and just homeless people generally who may be regarded as disabled, I guess, for different reasons, you know, mental health diagnoses or whatever.
We're talking about the invisible disability.
Right. If they face, if they enter, say, a coffee shop and they're told, we decide we don't want you here, we're not going to serve you, see that sign, we reserve the right to refuse service to anyone, they kick this person out, and the person says, you know, I haven't done anything. Do they have any recourse that you know of under law, and has that been a problem that your organization has addressed, or what suggestions would you have?
Good question, Robert. Thank you very much.
Sure.
We've had a couple of consumers come to us with this problem. Now, we're not attorneys, so what we generally do in this case is recommend to them a couple of different attorneys that we think might be able to help them out. There is the possibility of a lawsuit for being discriminated against. There might be the possibility of a an ADA lawsuit for improper accommodations. Under the ADA, it would in many cases be like a physical accommodation, changing the way the business is done a little bit. But that's the type of assistance that we give them, and hopefully hook them up with an attorney that they're comfortable with and the ability to file lawsuits.
So it mostly you see this thing as curable, those types of offenses as curable through attorneys. You don't know of any device through the various bureaucratic agencies that might handle this outside of legal action?
Not that I'm aware. Well, you could. In some cases, we have put the people in touch with Adult Protective Services. We've put them, if it's involved with a child, with Child Protective Services. I would recommend that the individual, if they are removed from a business or told to leave or something of that nature, if they feel they are being treated unfairly and illegally, that they contact the local sheriff, contact the police officer, and explain to them what's going on. If they don't feel like they're getting the backing of the local police department or the authority figures, then they're more than willing to give us a call, and we'll in turn make phone calls and see what we can do to try and help them get something worked out on their part so that they do have access to the parts of society that they want access to, their favorite coffee shop or their favorite restaurant or something of that nature.
So, and you do this in conjunction with your activities with the Central Coast Center for Independent Living.
Correct.
Okay, so that's the Central Coast Center for Independent Living, and I'm with Michael Bradshaw. Scott, I see you there. I want you to keep this general. I got a good idea that you might want to get specific. And have you got a general question, Scott?
Well, you didn't invited anyone who knew of crimes against disabled people in the community to call in.
Jerry's situation has been thoroughly discussed here, and I was trying to stay off getting into that full time today.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, I know that you're aware of crimes against disabled people. In fact, I know that it was compounded day before yesterday by your being thrown out of the coffee shop for going in as his assigned aide and attempting to purchase coffee for him.
Yeah, that's correct.
And I understand that, and it is one of those things that I'm trying to find an entire 40 minutes for, Scott.
Uh-huh.
Okay. If you will allow me that, I will do that at a later day.
Yeah, and before I go, I would just like to publicly thank Mr. Bradshaw for his wonderful article in the Aptos Times. Really thought it was really needed to be said. Had a lot of good points in it. Yeah, thank you.
I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Thank you for calling, Scott.
All right.
One thing, there may be a misconception here. When I'm talking about crimes against people with disabilities, I'm not just saying that all of these crimes are committed by authority figures or things of that nature. It's general crime from everybody,
yes,
from their neighbor, their relative.
To some guy they never
met
walking down the street.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
No, I understood that from the article. And when people read the article, again, Mr. Bradshaw's article is in the Aptos Times. I'd be willing to wager it will show up in the Capitola Times. It is extremely good reading. For those folks that want to get a more enlightened and sensitive view, for a lack of a better word, sensitive view of the plight of the disabled, not necessarily plight, but the lack of understanding, appreciation, and acceptance that is oftentimes demonstrated, not necessarily maliciously, by people in the society, this would be a good place to start. If you have some groups that you'd like Mr. Bradshaw to come and talk about these issues and how to become more sensitive and productive and helpful to the disabled among us, I'm sure that he will accept the calls. You can call him. They got the number wrong in the paper. It's 462-8720. I've cut your microphone off in case you're getting ready to say something, because I'm getting ready to go off the air. But that pretty much wraps up our show for this week. Mr. Bradshaw, your mic's back on again. Thank you very much for coming in. I think that you did a great service today. Help a lot of people start looking at these things differently, and hopefully it will benefit everybody.
Thank you for giving me this opportunity.
You got it. All right, this is Richard Quigley signing off, KSCO, AM 1080 Santa Cruz, the United States Freedom Fighter Forum, one more time. Thank you, Michael. I'll see you guys next week.